Penguin Random House Audio presents Art is Life. Icons and Iconoclasts, Visionaries and Vigilantes, and Flashes of Hope in the Night by Jerry Saltz. Read for you by Jerry Saltz with Mark Bramhall.
Introduction. The Medusa and the Pequod. Art and Life in Our Time. The first time the power of art pulled the rug out from under me, I was 19 years old. It was the early 1970s. I was in Europe for the first time on my way through Paris to Warsaw with my Polish girlfriend on a bizarre quest to sell blue jeans behind the Iron Curtain. On that day, during my first pilgrimage to the Louvre, I laid eyes on a painting that seemed the sum of all things. It was a cosmographic perpetual motion machine, a purgatorial charnel house, as far from the warmth of any human sun as anything I'd ever beheld. The moment I saw it, something like Krakatoa went off within me. That painting was Teodor Jericho's The Raft of the Medusa. Standing before it, I felt the gravitational field of my life shift forever. The Raft of the Medusa is massive in scale, yet its subject matter is as simple as cows in a field, bathers by a river, or a birth in a manger. We see a large raft bearing a crowd of male figures at the mercy of heaving seas. Their poses suggest a classical frieze, like Elgin marbles from hell, a collective ash heap of individually vivisected souls stripped bare of humanity. Each of the men is marked by a distinct, unforgettable gesture. Some are reckoning with their wounds. Others seem to be coming to terms with death. Some seem closer to damnation than to life. Every one of them appears hopeless. Our eyes are compelled by shafts of flickering phosphorescent light that rake at angles across the figures in the painting's foreground, tracing its dark pyramidal structure. It's a vision of jagged complexity and somehow also of profound grandeur. That day, as I contemplated the Medusa, I felt the shattering heartbreak of a long-forgotten memory. My mind carried me back to a moment when I was 10 years old, left by my mother to wander alone in the Art Institute of Chicago, scared and confused, until a small, colorful diptych by Giovanni di Paolo beckoned to me from across a gallery. A portal opened. A month later, my mother committed suicide. The portal slammed shut. I never looked at art again until I did. Every work of art tells a story, from hands on a cave wall to figures arrayed along a table for a last supper, from gleaners in a field to luncheons on the grass, from romping Greek gods to a Sunday in the park, to the cutout silhouette of a white man beating a slave. As Marcel Proust wrote, every reader, as he reads, is actually the reader of himself. The subject matter of Michelangelo's David is a biblical tale told in marble, but the deep content of this 500-year-old sculpture, its aesthetic substructure, its crux, and lifeblood includes ideas about sensuality, beauty, majesty, pathos, the power of the self, the potentiality of movement, the inchoate softness of marble, even the awareness of recently rediscovered classical Roman statuary so radical that it almost gave Michelangelo a nervous breakdown. Goya's Saturn Devouring His Son, like Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye, Alexander Solzhenitsyn's One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich. Nina Simone singing Strange Fruit, or Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now, makes you experience alienation, rage, horror, revulsion, love, grace, ugliness, absurdity, hopelessness, bloodlust, bleakness, the memories of meetings and partings, nightmares, phantoms, cultural dysmorphia, shapeless inner shadows, the shattering collapse of moral order, and the decay of the soul, all at the same time. The painting I saw that day at the Louvre had its origins in a real-life story of the transatlantic slave trade. In June 1816, the French frigate Medusa and three other ships were dispatched to Senegal to reestablish operations and resume the trade, which had been interrupted by the Napoleonic Wars. The Medusa's captain was Hugh Duras de Chemeray, a 52-year-old royalist who hadn't been to sea in decades and had never piloted a ship. The passengers, more than 400 in all, were a mix of monarchists, left-wing crew members, families, merchants, mercenaries, and convicts. The ship was inadequately outfitted, carrying outdated maps and too few lifeboats. On his first day at sea, Chemeray disobeyed orders and sped ahead of the rest of the fleet, hoping to impress superiors. Soon, he was sailing alone. After a series of miscalculations, including the failure to retrieve a man overboard, others began issuing orders. By July, the Medusa was approaching the deadly Argan Bank, an expanse of shallow water more than 40 miles off the coast of West Africa that had wrecked numerous ships. The crew knew the maneuvers to steer around this grave danger, but Chemeray ignored them. Finally, fatally, he mistook one crucial landmark for another, and on July 5th, the Medusa headed directly into the bank. The color of the ocean changed from deep blue to lighter green, then turned clear altogether. Dread came over the crew. The ship fell into hushed terror. Then, with a great scraping sound, the Medusa shuddered, shook, and ran aground. The crew scrambled to free the boat. The ship was far too heavy to pull out using lifeboats, and Chemeray refused to jettison its 14 heavy bronze cannons to make it lighter, fearing the wrath of his superiors. Panic set in. Recriminations flew. Fighting broke out among factions reflecting the ship's political divide. Finally, Chemeray ordered the construction of a very large raft to be pulled to shore by the six lifeboats. As the raft was being built, the captain, along with his officers and their families and friends, boarded the half-full lifeboats and prepared to cast off. With that, everything fell apart. Violence erupted. The panicked hordes filled themselves on wine, water, and food, and threw the remainder overboard. People jumped off the ship to claim the best spots on the raft. 147 people, including one woman and a 12-year-old boy, crowded onto the unsteady raft, which sat 2 feet deep in the water. Many had to stand. Others lashed themselves to whatever they could find. In the light of early morning, the lifeboats started rigging lines to the raft. When the ropes were pulled, the raft barely moved. After 6 hours of struggling unsuccessfully to tow the raft, at 11 o'clock in the morning came the fateful order. An axe was taken to the lines. The raft was cast adrift. Chemeray and his privileged companions sailed off. The raft had no maps, steering device, sail, or navigational instruments. On the first day, several threw themselves overboard. That night, A storm racked the raft. By morning...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?